So this is the fourth and final day of our retreat. Walking down the hall just a few moments ago, I saw evidence of dissolution. Evidence that the petals are beginning to fall off the flower of retreat. All the bags of laundry outside everyone's room. Soon, this thing we called a retreat will be no more. And for everyone who thought there really was such a thing as a retreat, will realize there never was anything called a retreat. Just causes and conditions came together for a period of time, and already they are in a state of dissolution. And that is just the way it is. If we were attached to the idea of retreat, if we were attached to the to wanting to hold on to that, the retreat will cause us suffering. But if we understand that it is the nature of everything to just come together temporarily and then unfold and then dissolve and disappear, it will not be an issue. But the important thing is, since there never was anything called a retreat, all there were parts that came together on a temporary basis. Each of us here is one of those parts. So in a certain sense, we can say, that which was a retreat is no more. But a deeper sense, the parts, which are also made of parts and have their causes and conditions, but those parts are still alive. And, when the afternoon comes after our final meal, the four winds, the winds of karma, will blow us each to their own direction, some south, some north, some east, even some west. And that is just the way it is. But wherever those parts are blown, wherever those seeds land, they have life in them. They have potency in them. Each of you carry the seeds of what you learned here with you. And they are yours now to either choose to let them be dormant, stay dormant. You even have the choice to have them rot. Or you can decide you want to cultivate them, you want to grow them, you want to nurture and nourish them. But that will be your decision. So on this final day of retreat, the thing most important is how we carry on. And so I want to make sure, I know there were some questions yesterday, MT, Marilyn, ask some things about future practice. So I want to spend this time together, this hour. Really, if you have any questions, I mean, in this retreat, there's been a lot of teaching coming from this side, as well as in our meditations, there's been a lot of very detailed guided instruction. But I want to make sure that you're clear about everything that you were taught here or shown here. But even more important, that you know how to just live it, to bring it into your life, though it doesn't just stay here. If there's anybody who sees they're not clear about how to practice this when they return to their life, or they have concerns about obstacles, hindrances, etc., please, this is the time for us to have a very open discussion. There is complete clarity going forward. So I know both Marilyn and MT said something. Nice that they're sitting next to each other. Marilyn, yes, you begin.
Next week, which is future, momentum of work.
You mean this week now?
Okay, this week.
Right, that's on.
Tomorrow.
There you go. Tomorrow, yes.
The momentum of life, most often work setting, however, just the pace, sees me experiencing building energy. Thursday, Friday comes, and I'm ready for the end of the week. And I realize I've not stopped enough or gone deeply enough in each day. So I start the day out with the 24 hours of settling.
Mm-hmm.
And
so let me just understand. So in your home, before you leave, you do your meditation, you set your intention, you feel settled and at ease, and you have the intention to continue that throughout the day. Then what happens?
Yeah, so then...
Let's just slow down. Then what in reality happens? You get in your car.
I get in my car. I get on I-75.
Right.
80 miles an hour. Okay. I don't have a wreck.
Really? Well, then why don't you slow down?
Gotta get to work on time.
Oh, gotta get to work on time. I see. Okay.
So in that space of going 80 miles.
Well, I mean, can you see? All right, let's start right there. Right. I mean, can you see already it's begun?
Oh.
You know, your ease is gone. Got to get to work. Can't be late. Don't want to get an accident. The suffering has begun. The suffering has begun. You know, can you see that? Yeah. So you can't do it that way. I mean, if you're a fast driver and you can drive at ease at 80 miles an hour, then that's okay. They could pull you over, but they don't on 75 for that. Right? But again, it's you're already speeding. There's already pressure building with you, and you're concerned about being late, and you got to go fast, but you're just concerned about getting. I mean, you're already there. It is. So that's your first practice. How can I drive to work with ease? Right. How can you take those pressures off yourself? Fear about getting into a wreck, fear about getting late. I mean, have you ever been late to work in your life?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, has the world come to an end? I mean, it hasn't made the front page news. Marilyn Warlick, 10 minutes late for work. Right? I mean, the world will go on. You will go on.
To do this.
Well, see, we haven't even gotten there yet. I mean, already you got yourself rattled. Can you see it? So that's your first practice period. You know, I would say shorten your getting it all together at home so you have more time, and make your first real practice period driving to work. You know, that's your first challenge. Can I drive to work with a free and easy mind? Not anticipating the future, not thinking about the past, just... Okay. So now let's say you've done that and you arrive at the work site. Then what happens?
And I go into the building where the cubicles are that we're all packed in together.
Okay.
And there's lots of chatter about what's gone on over the spine. And then I get on the website and see the emails and alerts and start to see what the day is.
Mm-hmm.
And I go...
How are you?
Calm moment at that point.
Okay, so that's calm. You can do that, just taking in the information. Okay.
Then I get in my car, my car, to start going around visiting folks where they live. Back into the traffic scenario. So there's again.
You mean everybody should get out of your way?
Well, yeah, no.
I mean, you say traffic, like, what does that mean?
Well,
Yeah, you know what?
Folks walking on walkers right across the middle of Fletcher. And
yeah, people do things like that. Yeah, people do. Yeah, keep going. Yeah, that's the way it is.
You can track of all that. And
you keep, what, your eyes have to keep track of that. How are your eyes?
They're good.
But
there's a lot going on.
No, hold on. There's not a lot going on. Because you're driving and you're keeping your eyes open to see what's there. I mean, that's all that's going on, isn't there? Am I missing something? Where's this? There's a lot going on. You might be one of them. Zooming along at it. But hold on. You already got a scenario going. Traffic, crazy drivers, people in walkers. I mean, I've driven on Fletcher. I haven't seen thousands of people in walkers crossing the street. I mean, like, just hordes of people in walkers, right? I mean, can we get into Marilyn's mind? Like, Fletcher Avenue is now thousands of walkers, crazy drivers weaving in and out. I mean, if you were in Delhi or something, I would understand that, but is that really what's going on in Fletcher?
Not to that degree.
But you're the one who gave me the degree. It's crazy drivers and people with, but that's not the truth. The truth is you're driving along, and then your eyes are open, and you can be at ease. What, do you think you have to be anxious and uptight to see, not to hit anybody? Yeah, that's all. Well, that's what we do in the tradition. We just pay attention, but we just do it mindfully and with ease. We don't have to get ourselves all whacked out with anxiety and everything, do we, to pay attention? No. Huh. Just be relaxed and keep your eyes open. Take a good defensive driving course.
The government gives us that.
Anyhow, all right. So you're driving down Fletcher, you're at ease, you're keeping your eyes open, you haven't hit anybody. Okay, and then what happens?
A home visit.
You mean you walk into somebody's home, and there's a human being there. Okay. Then what?
And I notice...
Yeah, then what do you notice?
There's a difference. If I'm going in a home
where
it's a cave or a setting that's built this way, and I'm settled being, it makes it something.
Yes.
That's a different experience.
Yeah. So when you go into somebody's home that's more like a home that you're used to, you feel okay. But when you go into a home of somebody who is suffering, like entering a little bit of a hell realm, something like that. It's not pretty, is it? No. But that is your job. Right? You are a bodhisattva who goes into hell realms to help suffering beings. That's what you signed up for, didn't you? Here it is. So you have to be able to not be affected by the outer elements and just basically see a human being who's suffering. Be of help in any way you can. You know, just have your understanding and compassion out. I mean, what is it that is disturbing?
The degree of suffering.
Yeah. But this person's in hell.
Right.
And you've signed up for a job to go into hell.
Yeah, being present.
Yeah.
It's giving all that one can give.
Mm-hmm. Which may not be much at all. May not be much help at all. You're just maybe just keeping the hell being alive. Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah.
And then coming back.
Yeah, so you leave that, and then what happens? Well, now Marilyn, see, Marilyn is kind of, she's gotten pressured and anxious driving to work. She's gotten pressured and more anxious driving on Fletcher and getting in traffic. she's gone into the hell realm, and even though she signed up for the job of going to hell realm, there's really a part of her that resists being in the hell realm and cannot deal with the suffering that she encounters in the hell realm, even though that's a hell realm is defined by its suffering. Right? So you have to have understanding to do that. Some people do those kinds of jobs with indifference, don't they? Yeah, but that's not our way. Our way is a way of understanding and compassion, but not to be overwhelmed by the suffering of this individual, because you know this is their just life unfolded this way, right? There are causes and conditions. Again, you're obviously there to see if you can, bring some new causes and conditions, right? So they suffer less. That's wonderful. But again, that's not the answer, is it? So again, you have to, forget about that home practice. That's easy. You know, you and Sam there in your sweet little home, practicing in your little meditation room with everything bright and perfect. You don't get any credit for that. Bodhisattvas don't get credit for that kind of stuff. That's kindergarten stuff. That's kindergarten bodhisattva land. Right? You know, but bodhisattvas practice in the world. On 75, on Fletcher Avenue, right, with suffering beings. And you have to see that that is your practice place. That's where you want to wake up. That's where you want to practice mindfulness, concentration, insight, compassion, right there. You know, anybody can do it at home, right? You know, we feel so proud of ourselves. We do our compassion. We do our affirmations. We generate loving kindness for the whole world. Right? Brian's going on about, you know, wanting all suffering beings to be enlightened. And, wonderful, 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 right? All right. And you get on Nebraska Avenue and that's something else. But there it is. So, you know, when you see that these are your places of practice, these are the best places to practice, and you bring that practice mind to all those other things, to your driving on 75, to your driving on Fletcher Avenue, to your encounters with all your patients, to your interactions with your work colleagues, you know, there it is. And you have to see it that way. You have to go as if you're going into the meditation hall. You know, when you go into your client's terrible room, you go there with, you know, your mindfulness, your bare awareness, your ability to understand, to look deeply. If you see yourself is getting worked up, you look deeply into the eye that's getting so worked up, doesn't want things to be this way. You know, you investigate the cause of your suffering. You don't just suffer. To suffer without understanding is wasted. You're just suffering. Why just suffer? Get another job. Right? But if you have a job like that, then you need to use it to awaken yourself. So I'd say stop the morning meditation with Sam. He's a bad influence. And make all your clients your practice partners. And then it'll be a different day. Your life and your work will not be an obstacle or a hindrance to your awakening. It will be the path of your awakening. Is that clear? And it's a wonderful path, the Bodhisattva path.
To be completely free wherever I am.
To be completely free wherever you are.
I thought I was kind of cooking down part. And I thought I would relax and not, you know. But at the end of the week, I could tell something's not working.
Right. And as you talk about it, you can see how, you know, right from the beginning, there's already a revving up. There's already a resistance. There's already seeing all these obstacles that are causing you anxiety or pressure or fear or sadness. You know what I mean? You can see it's... And if you don't see that clearly and work with it as it arises, yeah, it'll just build up as the week goes on. You're very fortunate. Also had a question you were going to ask yesterday about this coming week or work or something?
You answered some of it.
Okay.
But it was mainly at work. I've been bring a lot of my tools with me, and the Lagathas and passwords. I've been practicing my mindfulness, you know, as things come up. When I start to feel the tension and looking at it, but where I want to get to and what I will move towards is being mindful, you know, all the time, but approaching before I go into a meeting, you know, not as things come up in a meeting that I have to. So I'm more effective at work, and also I'm just a better listener. And so I think what you just said, maybe about setting my intention, will be something I haven't done that I can bring as my practice, you know, before meeting. Because I've been wondering, at times I wanted to have meetings with the group and just everyone just, we sit in silence before we start, you know?
That'd be nice.
Yeah. And I might try approaching it somehow, but it's a little bit, you know, I don't know.
Are you in charge of this group?
Well, sometimes I'm in meetings where I'm facilitating, and sometimes I'm not. But
okay.
But I can
so like,
do that myself,
yeah.
You know, but I would like, so anyway, that doesn't exceed what I want, but...
That's a nice suggestion, I mean, to just say before a meeting, I mean, just to bring that up about, you know, just everybody before they jump into the meeting with their own agendas and all their stuff, just everybody kind of relax and get present, have a little bell, and... I mean, it's not all that spooky.
What I'm asking is, I don't know how people would take it. I mean, I have a standing desk, and I'm one of the first people that did that, and so they already kind of know I'm a little bit.
I don't even know what a standing desk means. What?
Well, no, it's nothing. It's just a desk. But all I'm saying is that it might be taken okay from me. But it's not even a big deal.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, I'm sort of out of the workplace, but I mean, my sense is things have changed. You know, 20, 30 years ago when I was actively, you know, working, talking about mindfulness and meditation, you know, people kind of did look at you. But these days, mindfulness and meditation is in the New York Times. It's in Time Magazine. I mean, it's you know, I mean, there's all this research and, you know, lots of major corporations, you know, are teaching mindfulness and Google has a full-time, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I think you can suggest it in a very business-like way, you know, without referring to Buddhism or anything. And that's, I wouldn't be scared. What are you scared of?
I'm nothing, really.
Yeah, I mean, to acknowledge that you are different doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing. And if you have something that you, you know, it's not dogma, you're not trying to evangelize, it's just a technique that you think will be beneficial to the meetings. And I mean, I certainly would not be afraid to suggest it, talk about it. Maybe do a little in-service for your group at some point on basic mindfulness practice. Okay. Good. Heather, as you contemplate going back to home, workplace, family, relationships, work, society, many people refer to that as the real world, you know. As we prepare to go back to the real world, as if this is what? I don't know what, if that's the real world, then what is this? This seemed pretty real to me, but some people call that the real world. I actually call that the unreal world, but that's another question. Yes, Molly.
I think you experience life as, in general, like as you're present in each moment, experiencing life as phenomena mm-hmm. will help. Mm-hmm. Is helping already, and there's not much. I'm very fortunate, really. I mean, as far as the workplace, to spend a lot of time there together, the people that are there, and. My workplace on my floor, it's a big building and it's full of people, like 4,000 people, and on our floor it's like people know these are beings that we spend a lot of time with, and so it's pretty rare, the dissension. But it's, I guess what it is that I get caught up in, but I've been better, like in the non-self, being present and stopping is the busyness. It's not pettiness. It's just pure pressure from the amount of work and the deadlines. So, and. Also, there's good intention in general. I'm not just actually speaking for myself. The intention, you can feel the goodness with the intention for working for the citizens. But it's the busyness. Mm-hmm. It's the deadline thing. And the stopping is really helping, but also like experiencing each moment as an experience, a phenomenon. And it seems like that cuts the baggage. It like slices, kind of like the sword, you know, it slices the delusive part away, and it allows you to move progressively forward but stay present. So, really, that's kind of the, I'm just giving you some background. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the situation is the reduction in force. Causes and condition, mm-hmm. reduction in force, added duties, mm-hmm. and good intention, but pressure. Mm-hmm. So, what do you think about that?
Again, so the question is, I'm being reminded to repeat the question. Now, the question is, workplace situation, lots of good things in it, but there is a problem that because of cause and conditions, workforce reduction, etc., there's the same amount of work to do, but with less people to do it, and deadlines, and higher standards, and busy, and that's where you kind of lose it. You feel the pressure.
At times.
Okay. And again, the key thing you said earlier, which was phenomena. Okay. And this directly relates to all the practices we've been doing. We are cultivating what? Wakefulness. right? The capacity to be present. Just presence, empty mind, just presence. Last night we also understood something about awareness. Right. Now, awareness just is. This is awareness. Right? And to awareness, things appear. Right? Things appear. Mm-hmm. And if things appear going quickly, or if things appear going slowly, if things appear this way or that way, it doesn't matter to awareness, does it? Okay. When we lose our connection to awareness, and we get lost in phenomena, that's when things begin to speed up, when phenomena start speeding up. And that phenomena could be the actual phenomena of work and details and things to do, but it could also be the phenomena of our own mind, of our thoughts. You know. And when this is speeding up, and this is speeding up, you feel stressed, pressure, anxious, you know, those are the, and it's because what those mean is, so the more that we live in awareness, we live in mindfulness, which just holds things in awareness, right? And we just deal with phenomena as it arises, but without grasping. You see, as soon as we feel pressured, we've grasped at something. Got to be there on time. You see, there's a thought, 7:30, probably going to be a few minutes late. Right? That's just a thought. It comes, it goes, it gives you a little information. But if you grab at it, if you attach to it, it begins to get solid. And that's where it begins to, you know. So again, in Zen it's called the action of non-action. Outwardly, you can be very active. You know, some people think because we do slow walking that you can only walk mindfully if you walk slowly. That's not true. You can be as mindful walking, quick walking. Actually, in some Zen traditions, they do very fast walking. You know, I mean, mindfulness can be, you can be mindful with anything. Don't box it into think it's got to be a certain way. So, you know, you can have a lot of things to do. You know, the important thing is, this is where you need to develop your concentration so you can be very focused on one thing at a time. And just be focused on that. You see, a lot of people, you know, they're doing something, but it only has 50% of their attention. You know, 25% of their attention is they're thinking about some things that happened earlier, you know, and ruminating about that. And the other 25% is anticipating the all the other things on the to-do list. And you think you're present, but you're not present.
To be honest, I mean, just mm-hmm. placing away mm-hmm. the rumination part mm-hmm. has helped
yeah.
the focus quite a bit already. Just not ruminating on a flared temper or a, mm-hmm. a comment. Because
yeah.
it really, you know, I mean, just moving on past that has really helped a lot.
Right. So the more, again, you know, you can have 20 things to do, but each one you do one at a time. And you do that 100%. There's nothing, and you will find that if you can do each event, you know, mindfully present, very wakeful, you know, 100% absorbed, you know, you can do 20 things and you can do 20 things quickly. I mean, it's nice, you know, to take your time and have, you know, leisure time to wash the dishes, right? Very pleasant experience. But you can wash them very quickly, too, if time constraints are, you know, boom, 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 boom. And you don't have to be stirred up inside. You can do that with the same ease. So the problem doesn't come because things are moving quicker. The problem has come, our mind is, our thinking mind is moving quicker. It's gotten caught. And when we understand that, well, you know, what the problem is, we won't get we won't get thrown by the world of activity, the world of phenomena. Phenomena just arising in awareness. That's all that's going on. When you practice meditation, mindfulness, wakefulness, concentration, and so you'll see that's all that's going on. Thoughts are just coming and going, coming and going. Things are just appearing and disappearing. If you just let things be, you'll be at ease, because mind is at ease. But we grab, we ruminate, we obsess, we project, all the stuff we do, and that's where the that's where the stuff comes from. Right? So again, it's really the same thing. We need to see the world of activity is our meditation hall. Right? Whatever floor you're on, the 22nd floor, that's your meditation hall. That's where you're going every day. When somebody says, where are you going? You say, I'm going to the meditation hall. Okay? On the 26th floor. They may look at you a little strange, but do we care? Empty? What do we care what people think of us, right? Ever think about the life you're returning to, work, relationships? Is there anything unclear? Anybody think, anybody afraid, they're going to lose it? What, Maria?
When you say let things be and then mind is at ease. And I'm in a study with other people. Don't think the other people always get their way?
They're laughing because they think Maria wants to get her way. So
uneven.
All right. So. Yeah. No, actually, Maria's question is very insightful, because her concern is if one is at ease, just letting things arise, and does that mean inaction? Non-responding. It doesn't mean that at all. The ease we're talking about is an inner ease. Right? Molly just was talking about lots of things to deal with, right? So the advice was, just kick back, put your feet up on the desk, right? Play some games on the computer, Just be at ease, let things go. Now, that was not the advice we gave her, was it? The advice we gave her was, deal with things. But with Dharma, it's the how we go about it. It's how we relate, how we approach. Okay? Outwardly, we may still be doing the same things, but inwardly, it's a different terrain. So, can you give me an example of what you mean? So you're with a bunch of people, and what are you concerned? They'll get their way. Like, what's their way? What are you concerned about? I'm just concrete example.
Simple as going on vacation. And if I am...
No, I don't want you to get into your marital issues too much, but go on. That was a joke, forgive me.
Well, I don't have any other
issues. So since Gunther is here, so let's say you're planning a vacation. Okay. Shall we just call it X? Okay. You're planning a vacation with X. Okay. And then what happens?
And I'm... if that vacation is all about photography, to not be present then when finally you have a vacation and you can be together.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm totally at ease, and afterwards it was all about photography. You know what I mean? And so one expectation is so different than the other.
Okay. Yeah. So again, I mean, obviously, right? I mean, this is about your ease of mind, okay? So let us say you planned a trip, right? With your husband to go somewhere beautiful, right? You know he's a photography nut. You know, if I were you, before I would go, since you have history, you would talk to him about it. So it's very clear on this trip, is it all going to be about photography, or is it going to be about other things? And you know what I mean? So, you know, so there's, I mean, that's the deep listening. That's the deep sharing. That's the communication, right? So that's essential, you know, to hit it off at the pass by an agreement. Now, let's say you have an agreement, but all of a sudden, I won't mention anybody's name, they're not keeping it. They just love photography, and they're just, right, and you're noticing you're getting what?
Agitated.
A little irritated. A little angry, and before all the stories start about poor me and blah, blah, or what a rotten no good he is, and you know all that stuff. You know, we don't have to do anything. You just notice that you're aware that there's a little irritation at ease, and you look at it, and you realize, yeah, it is a legitimate issue. We did talk about it, and he did say he'd do this, and now he's not doing it. All right, so you would first take care of that. So you're at ease with your feelings, and you understand where they're coming from, right? And once you're at ease with your feelings and at ease with them, right? But acknowledging there's an issue, you know, then you would go to your husband, right? And just let him know what's going on with you. That's the first thing. Just let him know what's going on with you. And give him a chance to respond. Maybe he forgot the agreement. Maybe he understood the agreement differently than you did. You know, maybe it wasn't clear enough. Maybe he's just a photography nut and he just gets lost in it and think get out of perspective, and by you calling him back, he can see that, right? Oh, you're right. You know what I mean? Or maybe he's you know, like some of the rest of us, he's a little selfish. And I don't say that as if nobody else has that disease, you know. And again, you may be helping him by calling him to that. But again, you know, you don't do it in a the way we often do when we're angry, which is we attack the other person, and we make faults in the other person. This is it's a gentler kind of thing, right? You know, and at the end of the day, you learn. I mean, it could be he's not a good guy to go on vacation with. You know what I mean? Because he's just into, I'm just, as if you're not here, Gunther, right? you know what I mean? Because he's just a, you know, maybe he just is a photography nut, right? So, I don't know, you start planning vacations, he makes the promise to leave his camera home, I don't know. Or, you know what I mean? It's all workable. Again, all that agitation and the stories that go around it, it only makes communication more difficult. Good. Yes.
Well, I'm lucky. I don't have work issues anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had his practice years ago. But what I have are grandchildren. And the little ones, you know, when they were little, they were wonderful mindfulness teachers.
Mm-hmm. Then what happened?
Well, the oldest is turning 13.
Yeah.
And I've already bought her a cushion, which I haven't given to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to, I've done yoga with all five of the kids, including her. I just think
of remembering my own childhood, my own teenage years, that meditation would have been a helpful strategy or help to me. And I'm wondering,
Again, the question is a woman asking a question about her grandchildren who are now entering teenage years. She remembers her own adolescence and how if she had some kind of practice to calm or center her perspective would have been very helpful during those teenage years. And she would love to introduce it to her grandchildren. This practice is good for everybody. It's good for believers, non-believers, Christian, Jews, Muslims, even Buddhists it's good for. because it's not a theology, it's not dogmatic. I mean, anybody can do it. It's really just about the mind and the body. And, you know, so in that sense, I think it can always be introduced in a meaningful way to the circumstances of the person. Again, my sense always is, ideally, it's always best if somebody comes to you. Because then there's curiosity and interest, right? So, I don't know, if they come to your house and they see the meditation cushion in your house, or they come to your house and you say, Grandma, what have you been doing? And you say, well, I just was meditating, you know what I mean? I can't come to them because I'm going to a meditation retreat, or you come home and you talk to them, and you'd see if there's real interest. Right, and then there may be interest in some of them, and not interest in another. You know what I'm saying? So you kind of are watchful in that way. And ideally, if there was interest expressed, that would be an opening. I mean, since you do have a close relationship with them, to make an offer in a simple way. See. I remember, your children are older, your grandchildren are older, but I remember when I had, when my children were very young, and I asked Ty once, they were probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 or something, and I said to them, I really would like to begin to, get them moving in this direction. And he said a very interesting thing. He said, the meditation is not important. He said, "What's most important is that their relationship with Dharma and meditation is always positive. Right? It's always positive because those will plant the seeds. So in life, when they really need it, they'll always have a positive association. So my kids growing up grew up with Plum Village and retreats, and they thought, retreats were like camp. I mean, they want to go to a retreat. They would be, they had a great time. They could sit, they could not sit. Mostly they didn't sit. They sat for 5 minutes. They could run around. They could be free. Everybody was very caring to them. There were other kids there. So, their affinity with Dharma was always very positive. It was never opposed. I mean, they grew up in a home where they saw people meditating. Even when they were little, they would wake up and we'd be meditating, they'd come sit on our lap, and we would never push them away or, let them ring the bell. I mean, even I have a grandson now, and I let him ring the bell and light incense and, bang on things and, things like that. And it just allows him to create an affinity, right? When my kids were young, we used to do, like tea ceremony, but very modified. It would be like juice and cookie ceremony. And we'd always be sitting together you know, it would be something special. And we'd sit together and let one of the kids be on the bell. Usually my son, you know, a minute on the cushion, he was ready to, you know, get on with the cookies and the... my daughter had a few more minutes there. But that was fine. And then it was about, eating the cookie and the juice in silence. And so introducing mindfulness, but not in a on the cushion way, but in a way, you know, that's part of their lives, right? You know, even those that, you know... So, I mean, again, you could do things with your grandchildren where you'd say, you know, maybe, for the first few minutes of this, just tell me what you're tasting. Just taste the food. Just for the first minute or two. And then we can talk and right, at a meal time. But just, so, you know, very... You can begin to introduce mindfulness into your relationship with them. Right? Like even with my little grandson when I'm with him, often we'll just be sitting somewhere and I'll say, what do you see? And he'll look and he'll go, tree. Or he'll go, sky. And I'll go, you know, I'll name something. He'll look and we just look and see things. Again, it's might not call that formal Dharma meditation, but it's beginning to develop a relationship with the world where they begin to notice things and be attentive to things.
Do you ever have any ideas, like when they get upset about something, would you ever or a suggestion how to manage themselves in that?
Yeah, again, breathing, calming, very helpful to children. Unfortunately, most children, no one teaches them how to be with their, oftentimes it's anger. You know, kids get easily frustrated or something. And so learning to calm themselves, right, by breath is very helpful to children, and I think it's very helpful for teenagers, because we know a teenager, one of the characteristics of adolescence is they have very strong feelings and emotions and they overwhelm them, and they don't have, and no one tells them how to deal with it. Right? So teaching them mindfulness about how to identify what the emotion is and to just allow them to feel it and how to calm it and to just breathe, to quiet down, I think it's mindfulness, it's Dharma, but it's very helpful to them in a very simple way. Showing them just how to concentrate. You know, people say, oh, you got to concentrate, but they never tell them how to do it. So again, you know, helping them, which can be very helpful in their schoolwork or their sports or other things. And again, you know, we're fortunate these days that mindfulness and meditation and concentration are very much used, let's say, in education these days and in the sports world and stuff like that. So, you know, there is a reference to it. So there are many things, ways to introduce mindfulness other than sitting on the cushion. Because of what I found, if there's one thing that teenagers hate is sitting and doing nothing. I mean, that's kind of like, I believe the phrase is boring. Right?
She's already saying on the phone, after
you
get.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What'd you do?
Yeah. So again, you know, you can begin to tease that out. When you think about, yes.
A part of my life is at home, and has recently retired, and I'm also occupied with some very routine home-type chores, activities.
Mm-hmm.
And two questions about that. One is, I find that when I'm doing those things, I very easily go off and
my fancies and thoughts. It'd be helpful to me to have some practice. I kind of set myself before I do those things.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is that I see a part of my practice, my bodhisattva practice, is attending to what makes my husband happy,
mm-hmm.
and not meeting, you know, to allowing his preferences to be mm-hmm. guiding preferences,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time trying to kind of figure out my stuff, like my sitting practice, and trying
mm-hmm.
to, you know, kind of figure out when to do what with that
mm-hmm.
that idea. So those are the two parts.
Yeah, I think that's kind of simple. I'm sure you have the answer already. Again, you know, household work is wonderful mindfulness work. You know, if you travel 5,000 miles and went to a Zen monastery somewhere overseas, they'd have you sweeping and raking and working in the kitchen. It's very domestic. our quote-unquote domestic activities are always considered practice opportunities because most of our domestic activities are fairly mindless. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, cleaning, sweeping, cooking, you know. I mean, so again, if you wanted to, you know, get Zen training, you know, you learn about chopping vegetables single-mindedly, and you learn how to rake, you know, without any attachment. You know what I mean? These are this. So, you know, so it's like what we're saying to the others, you have to begin to see that these things that are part of your life are your practice. Right? And again, you can continue to be doing everything you're doing, except you are now doing it, you're awake when you're doing these things. Right? And again, I think it's always good for us to get out of our egocentricity, which means we, you know, like we always think of ourselves, and to notice there are other human beings in our life, and you know, want to contribute to their well-being. Certainly, good. The less we think of ourselves, and the more we care for others, we're getting healthier. Again, just so Maria understands, that does not mean that, you know, that things aren't balanced, right? But it means usually in relationship, our main focus is on what? On us, right? What's in it for me? Who's doing what for me? Who's taking care of me? Who's meeting my needs, my wants? You know, and that's our, you know, that's, 75% of our concern. And every now and then we realize there may be somebody else who has a whole set of wants and needs, and maybe they see us as the one who's supposed to meet that. But so when that dawns on us, we realize there's a lot that we could be doing, and that it will return to us because again, in our tradition, we put the onus on ourselves first. Right. Usually in worldly traditions, we put the onus on the other. I want them to be what? More loving, kinder, more open. You know what I mean? It's like we have our list of all the things we want from them. Right? But in our tradition, which I'm not allowed to say anymore, I'll take that back. In the Buddhist tradition, we become it ourselves first. Let me become a more loving person, a kinder person, a more thoughtful person, a less selfish, more selfless person. Then I am actually demonstrating it in life and offering that to somebody. There's a good chance that they may get it just by you doing it. But it's a little risk for us, right? Because, you know, it's like, all right, I'll do it if you do it. But you do it first, then I'll do it. That's the way we do it. And so nothing changes. Right. But it's like, oh, if you want a more loving relationship, become a more loving person. I mean, it's kind of simple, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh, he says, you know, we offer the other people in our life, we offer them our happiness, we offer them our well-being, we offer them our love, we offer them our service. It's an offering that we make. You stop waiting for the world to be the way you want it to be. Heather, yes. Just checking. So we're stopping at 11:15.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a situation where somebody has a grudge against me, and I've done what I think I can to well, the situation was really simple. She was snoring. I traveled with the two together very loudly. Couldn't sleep even through earplugs, and I asked her. She didn't mind going with her. That's the whole scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And a huge grudge came out of it that I'm a very selfish person and I would put my needs over her needs to sleep. And I apologize for that. Just said, yes, I did. And I'm sorry that that disturbed you.
Right.
This is now over a month later.
Yeah.
And there's a bruise in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And a grudge.
Grudge.
I mean, I'm aware it probably hit some huge story of hers and something, or whatever.
Yeah.
This is a big Dharma practitioner, too. This is not somebody who doesn't know the Dharma.
Really? I would say this is somebody who doesn't know the Dharma.
I would agree with that.
I mean, then I tell you that somebody doesn't practice Dharma. I mean, I'm sort of... to me, Dharma is not something hypocritical. You know, you're either practicing or you're not. And if you're holding a grudge and it's all about you, then you're not practicing Dharma. There's no teaching in Buddhism that I'm aware of which says hold on to grudges and cultivate anger. That's not Buddhism, is it?
No.
Okay. All right, I'm just saying. But that makes it easier because then you're not going, oh, but she's a Dharma practitioner. Get rid of that.
That's fine with you.
Okay. Yeah. What do you do? You say, you know, I didn't mean to offend you. And, you know, there was just some issue that was causing me suffering. I just wanted to share it with you. Maybe I didn't do it skillfully. Forgive me.
That part's all done. It's a month later now.
Well, then what do you, you know?
I mean, in life, some people...
Lee.
Yes?
You've been practicing Dharma how many years?
Too many.
Okay. This realm that we're living in traditional Buddhism, it is called what?
Suffering.
It is the world of birth and death. It is the world of suffering. You know who lives here? Yeah, suffering people.
Suffering.
Okay. Right? This is who lives here.
Yes.
Deluded people.
Yes.
Right? You know, there are other places to go. There are other incarnations to take. This is not the end all and be all. Okay? So when you understand that this is the nature of this reality. This is a world where ego is king and queen. There it is. And in some it reigns supreme, in some it reigns much more mildly. But this is the nature of this world. And whether people call themselves Dharma practitioners or Christian practitioners or Sufi practitioners, I mean, that's just a name, you know. But at the depth, it's that's what it's about. And so don't be surprised by egoism. Don't be surprised by delusion. I mean, you know, that's... It's everywhere. It's a disease that everybody here gets.
Right.
Why do we practice? To get healthy. That's what we practice. Okay. And then again, there seems to be just something in you that you cannot accept that this person is who they are. They're telling you very clearly who they are. And even though you may be trying your best to have them be somebody other than they are, it probably only gets them more pissed off. You know, I mean, my sense is this is where your understanding is and your compassion, right? You've made your amends. You've done your, you know, if you've really done it wholeheartedly. But again, you know, there was an issue. It was a simple issue. And obviously, this person doesn't want to deal with it. And they want to cultivate anger and all that stuff. And she's suffering. If anybody is cultivating a grudge and maintaining anger, they're suffering. They're cultivating suffering. That's too bad. Again, my sense at a certain point, you just say, I'm sorry I've been the cause of your suffering. I didn't mean to. I've done everything I can. You know, if and when you want to, work through this with me, I'm always available. And I'm here. You know, I'll talk to you anytime you want. And then you let it go. Because it's her grudge, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I've done. And I noticed the discomfort, I let go of it.
Yeah.
When we interact, I can feel that reserved part over here.
Mm-hmm.
I let go,
mm-hmm.
be with her and have compassion. And I haven't tried to, anytime you want to talk about it.
Yeah, or you just have to let it go.
Yeah, and keep letting it go.
And keep letting it go. I mean, that's... This world's a mess, Lee, haven't you noticed? I mean, people are just whacked out. Get upset over the simplest things, including us. You know, I mean, we're not all that different.
Yeah.
Right, and that's just the way it is. I mean, hopefully we practice so we can mature, so we can grow up, be adults. What does an adult look like? Looks like a bodhisattva. That's a real adult. That's what we're trying to grow up to, really become a good human being. But. So good. We should probably come to an end. Again, as we said earlier, this retreat is made up of parts. You are the parts. And when you leave here today, wherever you go, it is your responsibility to keep it alive through all the practices and the teachings that you've received. They are meant to be practiced. And you will reap great benefit, and those around you will reap great benefit from that. Good. So we'll end here.